If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Talk New York sports on The Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
Brandon Tierney, Sal Acotta back on The Fan. Time to get with the crown topic of the day. We started the show talking about Pete Alonso and his struggles all season long, but in particular last night, runners in scoring position. Look, 17 games to go, and it doesn't even have to be just about Pete Alonso, BT, although he drew my ire last night, whether it's the first inning, whether it's later in the game. We're waiting for Alonso to have his impact on this season, and with just 17 games to go, the Mets are going to need it. But it's not just Pete Alonso. It's other stars as well down the stretch for both the Mets and the Yankees that have been struggling.
I could agree more. I mean, can somebody point out, you know, to me, and I'll do it for you, I'm saying that rhetorically, like why the inconsistency? Think about this. We're one game in now. I know that they've been here longer than somebody like Soto, but Joe Douglas, you know, one game in, we're already burying him for the Reddick stuff, and Robert Saleh, nobody believes in him, and Daboll, I think that support's waned a little bit, and Joe Shane, really, who is he? Nobody really knows yet. The events, Daniel Jones, something we'll get more into tomorrow, going into this Commanders game, week number two. I mean, the football season just started, and we're already, like many of you and some of us, foaming at the mouths and then throwing out this criticism, and it's pretty deep stuff. Yet here we are with like 93.5% of the, a little more, of the baseball season already complete, and pennant races up in the air, and the last 7 days, and he's been phenomenal, but this is what it is. Last 7 days, Lindor hitting .167. Last 15 days, Pete's hitting .178. Last 15 days, and beyond that, Judge, and we love him, has done nothing, hitting .91 with no home runs. Soto, he's gone cold last 15 days, batting .229. The Orioles are ripe for the taking. Some of the teams in the NL have stumbled, and with better production for Lindor and Alonso, and obviously Judge and Soto for the Yankees, both teams are shoo-in to get there. Now, the Yankees will get there, no matter what. And the Mets obviously have a good chance to get there, but it's not a lock just based on the standings. Hey, guys, I mean, just because football season started doesn't mean that these four superstars, or at least, you know, maybe Alonso's not a superstar, but a star, an all-star, these guys aren't above being criticized. Wake up.
It's go time. Here's why my focal point would be Alonso. Soto's had an incredible season. Judge, obviously, incredible season. Lindor, MVP season. Alonso hasn't. He hasn't even had a month. Even Brandon Nimmo, who's had a, you know, in total, a bad year. Nimmo fell off the cliff going into the All-Star break, where he was fighting to be an All-Star. Before that, he was on fire carrying the team along with Lindor. He even had his moments. Pete hasn't done it yet. And anytime we would come on and criticize him, it was, yeah, but there's plenty of time to go. Alonso can get hot and carry the team for a week. And I thought multiple times, all right, this is where he's going to get hot and take off. All right, no, this is where he's going to. There's 17 games to go. It's over. Like, this is it. It's now or never for Alonso, potentially as a Met. So with those other guys, and I do think that, I wouldn't say that there are concerns, but if Lindor doesn't hit, the Mets are not going to go to the postseason. Yep. That is clear. If Judge and Soto don't do significant damage, they are not going to win.
They're not staying.
Yeah, exactly. They'll be out quickly, potentially a first round.
I agree.
If Alonso can get going, it will help take the Mets to another level. We've been waiting for that all year long. They've survived without him having really any impact. He's had maybe as quiet a 31 home run season as you could possibly have. I mean, he's only got 79 ribbies, which is hard to believe. Oof. He's now hitting under .240. Alonso was, and even when he was hitting .250, he still just wasn't. Anytime he comes up in a spot where you're like, all right, change the game here, big boy, with one swing, he doesn't get the job done. But there's 17 games to go. It's now or never for Pete BT. And forget about the long-term stuff. Just for now, the Mets offense needs him. They've been winning with their pitching. Yankees been winning with the pitching too, but that's a different story because you know what Judge and Soto can do. If Alonso doesn't pick up the team here, he's had a useless season.
I understand what you're saying, and I would agree with that. And I said to start the show that to me, now you've got to understand, and I can't weave it in, otherwise I'll never be able to advance the point here. Yeah. You guys can do it on your own because you guys know baseball as well as anybody. I would say, that, and I did say, that this is the most disappointing baseball season that I can, from an individual player, that I can truly recollect in a while. You throw the contract stuff, everything around Pete, okay? You can disagree with that, that's fine, that's my opinion. And I hear you, what you're saying about Pete, but maybe because he's had a substandard season, and I wasn't all in on signing him before this. Matter of fact, I said that I wouldn't.
Right.
I've kind of distanced myself from the Pete Alonso party. So maybe I'm not as wrapped up in his season and his shortcomings like I am with the other stories surrounding the three players. And here's what I mean. Judge is going to win. I know Witt's amazing. Judge is going to win the MVP. But if Judge wins the MVP and Judge still stumbles the next couple of weeks and doesn't do much in October, how does that MVP truly feel? Not as strong as it might ordinarily.
Well, say they don't win the division, which is very possible.
Very possible. I mean, they're half a game up right now. Soto. Let's say that Soto, and he hasn't been as bad as Judge lately, but he's been chilly and not Soto-like. Let's say that Juan Soto languishes, 220, 230, again, just a big if, a fairly feeble October, and he gets the contract. Is it going to feel this? And he will get, and the Yankees will try to, they're going to try to keep him. We'll see what he does. Will that contract extension, if he stays with the Yankees, feel as good to Yankee fans if he just peters out and a great season becomes merely a good season without a championship? The answer is no. And then specific to Lindor, now, I understand the MVP conversation around Lindor. He truly deciphering for what the award should be. Lindor's right there. Now, Ohtani's going to win it, there's no doubt. But Lindor is number two, and he should be, all right? But if Lindor doesn't do much these next couple of weeks after being very quiet the past week or so, after the bad start, don't you think that, right. I know it changes for me, the way I perceive his season, even if and when he finishes second in the MVP race? The answer is yes. So there's varying degrees of criticism for all these players. Pete bears the brunt for many because he's had the worst year.
Right, but depending on the results. See, for me, Pete bears the brunt right now with 17 games to go. If Lindor does not finish strong and lead the Mets into the postseason, then he will take some criticism, even in a year where he's been otherwise terrific because of the way he started and because of the way he finished. Those things matter, especially getting in now. The Mets should be a playoff team. Forget what the expectations were before the year. It's changed. So now the expectation is you've got to go head-to-head with Atlanta and beat them to get in the postseason. It may not just be the Braves, but you get the point.
Yep.
The Braves are on their schedule. They have three games with Atlanta. Somebody's going to win that series. Somebody's going to lose that series. Mets can't afford to lose the series, as simple as that. Will Lindor carry them through that series? Will Alonso be a part of it? If Lindor doesn't, then and the Mets as a whole don't, my feel is going to be the same as I said coming into the year. I don't trust the core. We're now getting down to the final games here where we're going to really find out what they're made of. We know that the Mets can be resilient. They've proven that time and time again this season. 0-5 start, 11 games under, they've come back. We know that they could beat you in different ways. We know the ball club was built deep, sound. We like the managers. There's a lot that we've learned about this team.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing we still don't know about is the core. The same core that got beat head-to-head in 2022 and never recovered until now. And now they're going to have a chance to redeem themselves against Atlanta. And you want to throw in Philadelphia, too, the seven games against the Phillies? That's fine. Right now, the division technically isn't over, but I know it's more about Atlanta. Point is, they're going to have to beat the big boys in the National League East if they want to make the playoffs. What will this core do? Will Lindor rise again once, like he did the majority of this season, and try all he can to lift this team into the postseason? Will Alonso step up and do the same thing? Will Brandon Nimmo do the same thing? McNeil's out of it, and he's not the core anymore. Vientos has taken over that spot. You get the point. But really, Lindor, Alonso, Nimmo, still going to be ultimately judged based off of what they do down the stretch here. And to further the point, Judge will be judged on what he does down the stretch and in the postseason. Regardless of how many home runs he hits in the regular season, if Aaron Judge does not get this team to win a division or get this team through the postseason, he's going to be judged for that.
I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Now, when we do the influence on the season for the Mets, pecking order of power, if you will, we agree. Like, where Pete is and where the other players are, Iglesias, the other stories, the pitching. So we're always lockstep on that. My question is this: if I said, and I don't know your answer, I don't think I've ever asked you this. I have my three written down. Sal, what are the three things from this season, okay, that excites you the most about the Mets' future?
Vientos?
In order. The first one's obvious.
Mendoza?
Stearns, Mendoza.
Are they a combo?
Duo.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Okay.
Number one.
That will be number one, clearly.
Me too.
Player wise.
Well, however you want to go.
Yeah, Vientos was the first one that came to mind.
I have him as number two.
Third thing that excites me, it's probably.
Third one's tougher.
Yeah, but it's probably still Lindor. Because I don't think you can make a case for anybody else offensively. Pitching-wise, I haven't seen enough. Like, yeah, Manaea's been great, but he might not be a part of the future. Severino, same thing. I haven't seen enough from the guys in the minors come up. I'm not going to get that excited about the bullpen. I think it's got to be Francisco Lindor. So I would go Stearns, Mendoza, Vientos, and then just the dominant level, the MVP level Lindor has played at the majority of the year.
It's funny. I have the same list. We see this team very similarly. Very similar.
Well,
the same list that I got.
It could be unfortunate that there is no real clear third option.
Well, you wish it was Alvarez.
Exactly.
Alvarez. That's what an awful
want.
Second season he's had.
If I flipped it to you and asked you the same question about the Yankees, what would your answer be?
Okay.
Because, you have Volpe who did not.
It's a great question. Because the Yankees are, it's very different. Yeah, it's very different.
It is very different.
Because I'm not going to say the GM-manager duo because they've been around for a while and I don't feel that way. So
not them.
It's not that. Let me think about this. Number one, number two, number three. Okay. I am still going to say number one is Judge. Like, Aaron Judge, he's become the best player I've ever seen.
Okay.
So I didn't say that last year. I don't know that I felt that.
Right.
I feel that this year. I've said that this year. Mm-hmm. Like, in my lifetime as a baseball and a Yankee fan, like, I've gotten to see Babe Ruth come to life.
Right.
And I appreciate that. Number two. It might be Austin Wells.
Right.
I think the Yankees certainly found the lefty stick of the future. I think they very well found their catch for the future. Number three is tricky because I'd be lying if I said Volpe, though I still, really, really like him.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say Volpe in good consciousness. I can't, or good faith. It's not Rodon. It's not Cortez. It's not Cole, even though Cole's a beast.
Clark Schmidt.
Clark, I got to see it. Clark was good the other day in Chicago. Got to see a little more. Dominguez has barely played.
Yeah.
Dolph, who did you say in my ear?
Dominguez.
Well, he hasn't played. Why would it be? Why would I say Dominguez?
You still be excited for the potential.
Well, I am, but I mean, I think I'm excited, but it's more tangible stuff.
Right.
Number three. I mean, it might be Clark Schmidt. I'd probably say Soto because I think he's staying.
Right. I would probably go Soto number one. Just the excitement of Soto, whether he stays or not.
If he has to stay.
Yeah, but
because my question to you was for the future.
Right. Well,
so if I'm going to react to the same premise, it's got to be about the future.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. Well, then it would be the future, potentially future of Soto. And we just don't know if he's going to stay here or not. So if you're taking him out because of the unknown, then I would go heel in no particular order, I guess, as far as 1, 2, 3. I would go heel. I would go Wells. And I don't know if there is a clear.
You know what? Jazz. Jazz is young. He fits New York. He's got a little bounce,
the answer
which this
really,
team needed.
Volpe or Dominguez really needed to be an answer, and we did not learn enough about that. Like, I'd probably put Clark Schmidt third.
Yeah,
if
you might.
If we're just looking on individuals, taking Soto out because of the unknown, Heel, Wells, and Schmidt have at least shown that, hey, these guys might be players, young players moving forward.
Well, think about this, Sal. I know we got a break.
Yep.
Think about this, though. Alvarez, Volpe, and Dominguez would have been, in whatever order, and probably Alvarez first based on his power last year, 1, 2, and 3 on like the excitement, the future for New York baseball. Really, nobody. Alvarez has gone backwards.
Right.
Volpe's taken incremental steps forward, but not enough, and Dominguez has done nothing.
Yeah. It's as far as that goes, been a rough year for both teams.
If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This happened. You talked about it on The Fan.
He's homered. Derek Jeter homers to tie the game. And there it is. Hit number 3,000.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
It is a Jersey Mike's Yankees box office blitz. We've got a pair of field-level tickets. See the Bronx Bombers against Pittsburgh at Yankee Stadium Friday, September 27th. Right now, be caller number 13 at 866-540-WFAN. That's 866-540-9326 for your chance to win. It's all from Jersey Mike's, the official sub sandwich shop of the New York Yankees box office blitz and The Fan. Listen again tomorrow for another chance to win. And right now, it is an honor to be joined by the voice of the Yankees, Susan Waldman, first voice ever heard on WFAN. I love you, Susan. I don't think I've ever had you on any of my shows. But it is. And Susan, stop taking these days off. I don't want to hear BT in that booth. I want to hear more Susan.
No, That's it. No, I couldn't help it. You know, I couldn't. And thank you for having me. And by the way, all you have to do is ask. Nobody ever asked me. Everybody says, you never come on my show. I don't remember you calling and saying, let's go on.
You know, I was afraid to. And Susan, I got to be honest with you. I don't even know if
I
had
you. Wait a minute. You're afraid to?
Well, I don't want to bother you. I know you're busy. And I'm like, Susan doesn't even know who I am. And then honestly, what happened was Susan, truth be told, one of my favorite texts ever. And I forget if it was when I just got hired for the full-time overnight. I think it was. If not,
it was this one.
Oh, it was midday. It was midday. Yeah. I got a text from Susan.
Don't
saying,
read it on the air.
No, I won't. But it was a very nice text.
Wait. Don't read it on the air. Did she take a knock? Yeah, Congratulations, despite having to work with that guy.
You know what I said? Hi, BT. I said, it's about effing time.
Yes,
there we go. That's good, Susan.
That was one of my favorite texts ever, and I love you for that, Susan, but thank you for taking the time.
That's fantastic. And by the way, feel free to take a few more days off from the booth.
You know what? The only reason that I took days off, I literally lost my voice and couldn't talk.
I know.
And that was, that's a terrifying thing for someone who makes their living with their voice.
God.
All of a sudden, it was gone. It was awful.
And I heard you the night before, and I could tell it was going a little bit, and then obviously you came back, and you're back to being Susan Waldman. All right,
it's like my doctor said, I must have a lot of stress this year.
Well, we all do, because let's face it, if Judge and Soto don't hit, the Yankees don't score. You know, there's a few ways to start here, and some are obvious. I'm going to go a little less obvious. Like, year two, like, we all want Volpe to be a superstar because he was a first-round pick, and he's from here, and he's shown flashes. Have you adjusted what you think his ceiling could be based, meaning lowering it a bit, based on what you've seen almost 2 years now?
No, I have not, because I watch other guys. Let's take Bobby Witt out of the equation, although he's not hitting right now either, but he does other things. Watch, more comparable is what Gunnar Henderson is doing right now, which is like getting back. He's not hitting and making errors. And I do not adjust expectations for 23-year-olds. I mean, because all of a sudden something's going to click. I think that they threw a lot at him to come up at his age and, win a gold glove or whatever that was. I mean, I think there's a lot more room for growth, and I do not think that he's anywhere near his ceiling. It's a really dangerous and awful thing to say that somebody can't do something any better when they're 23.
It's true.
You don't know what coach is coming next. You don't know what clicks. You don't know if he and Austin Wells are going to go have chicken parm again and figure something out.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just, I really hate that. I mean, I don't, if the guy is 27 or 28 or 29, you say, okay, this might be it. But I don't think so. I don't think so. It's also, there's a lot thrown at him, and it's, he's the shortstop of the New York Yankees. And I think, it doesn't make the results any better or worse. What he does do is try and contribute in some way to having a win. And that's all I want to see. And it's hard to, don't forget, Derek Jeter used to come back year after year. There was something a little different. One year he worked on, he didn't just come up with that Jeterian swing. He learned it. And he said, okay, they're pitching me inside. What can I do? And one year he came back and they said, oh, there you are. But he did a little bit every single year. So I think you got to calm down about Volpe right now.
Do you think, Susan, that's part? I love that story about Jeter, because I was going to ask you before you even said that about the inconsistencies, not just with Volpe, but overall, it seems like in baseball from year to year, from month to month, well, who the hell knows what's going on? Lindor can't hit for 2 months and it turns into an MVP. Volpe looks like a superstar in the making, and then he can't hit. Why inconsistencies in today's game in Major League Baseball?
Well, if I knew, I'd be getting paid a lot more money. But here's what I think. I think we have taken for granted how good the pitching is. and how, I mean, these guys, I'm not saying they can pitch. Seth Lugo pitched yesterday. That was not on the Yankees at all. That was him saying, this is what I had wanted to do my whole time with the New York Mets. You didn't let me, and look what I can do. That was wow. But the velocity and the fact that you don't see the same pitcher more than twice the best pitchers are usually at the end, but I think everybody's got flaws on their rosters, so it makes it inconsistent. But I think a lot of this lack of hitting is pitching. And I think the pitching is way ahead of the hitting right now.
I think that's an interesting observation. You know, back in the day, you know, whether it was Mattingly or Boggs or, you know, Lou Piniella before that, what, Thurman, anybody, where you can just keep going back and back and back. You know, they'd face a guy three or four times. They didn't have somebody throwing 99 out of the pen, if not more, with three pitches that dart down a foot. And I wonder, Susan, because you've been doing this for a long time, you've seen the game change. What do you like about the new game, and what do you really dislike?
Oh, boy. I'll tell you what, I'll make it really simple. I think information is fine. Information is great. I hate that they have taken the humanity out of the game. These people, these players are people. And you can't, just because the iPad, the answer is not always in an iPad. And that's what bothers me. So instead of, you know, saying, well, you know, he's supposed to hit a slider. Well, what if that slider is different than what you thought it was going to be? And I think that there's too much of this reliance on, and everybody does it. You know, instead of saying about admiring a home run, someone will say the exit velo. Well, that's nice. I mean, I do it too because it's in front of you, so you say it.
Yeah.
But that's what that I think that's the bothers me is that a lot of the I don't see as much humanity in the game and sports. This is why we play the game. This is why we play the game so that, for example, the New England Patriots actually won a game. They thought they were not going to win all year. I heard the Boston sports show, can't win this one. And that's why we watch. Yeah, they did. I mean, and that's what sports is to me, not what you're supposed to do out of an iPad. That's the only thing that bothers me.
Well, I've got something for you that I think is going to bother you as well, but I do want to get your opinion on this. So, matching wits, you know, Billy Martin, La Russa, Bobby Cox, I mean, Whitey Herzog, the great managers, of course, Earl Weaver. There was the gut element. That's obviously been, for the most part, phased out of baseball with numbers. All right, we have to accept it because it is what it is. What bothers me is the being overly sensitive towards players when they fail because they made a physical mistake, but when they make a mental lapse. And listen, I like Aaron Boone. I've supported him. I don't think he's amazing, but I think he's certainly good, and I respect him. But I think too often he's protected somebody like Gleyber Torres. Gleyber Torres was touched by the baseball gods in a way that many players were not. As a second baseman, he's got power, he's got soft hands, but yet he floats and he disappears. And I know he's hitting now, but intermittently not there mentally. And because it's 2024, you got to protect everybody, you can't say anything wrong, God forbid you offend the modern athlete. You know, we protect these players and we don't, the managers, in this case Boone, doesn't call it for what it is, and it bothers me. And you're asking the questions after the game, and I know you see what I see, and it's probably going to bother you.
Oh, okay, but here's the thing that we don't see. We don't know what Aaron Boone says to Gleyber Torres. We have no idea what goes on in there because they are so protected. They're protected from us. They're not protected from each other. You don't know what goes on in the back. And I first started realizing this way back. You'd think Joe Torre was Father Flanagan. You ever heard Joe Torre, Dale? No. And I'm always places where I shouldn't be.
Yeah.
So that's why I know this.
Yeah.
We don't know what he does. We absolutely don't know. And you know, Aaron, one of the reasons Aaron Boone was hired, quite frankly, is because he is that person. And this is a different age, and you and I might not like it. You know, we like Billy Martin going and pulling Reggie out of the game.
Love it.
I mean, but you can't do that now because you got six agents calling,
yeah,
and you got the Players Association saying you humiliated my guy. You can't do that anymore, and that's the reality of it. We're still reacting like fans, like we always did, but the game is different.
Okay.
And that's tough to get used to. It really is, particularly when you're doing a talk show like you.
That is true. Susan Waldman, by the way, with us here, BT and Sal. We got to let it rip,
yeah,
Susan. Otherwise, we can't be happy on the air.
Yeah, right.
Okay, here's the thing. I agree. And I didn't mean to imply that Aaron Boone doesn't get after Torres, or you could take any other managerial player relationship situation. Josh Donaldson, you know, pimping the home runs or yeah, all that stuff, right? But if it's not, but yeah. Susan, if it's not corrected, right? I know it's addressed behind closed doors, but if it's not corrected, well, then I can say it's not working.
Well, you can actually, but how do you know it's not working?
Because I still see him being lazy.
Here's the other thing. You don't know about these. Gleyber Torres, by the way, when he makes a mistake, is as devastated as anybody and stands there and says, that was my fault and I lost focus. He does. He admits it all. And one of the things about Gleyber is that a lot of times he confuses himself with Robbie Cano, because Robbie did this and Robbie could do it. And, you know, and a lot of people have been accused of kind of being nonchalant. I remember Daryl years ago. They thought Daryl nonchalanted. No, he didn't. That's how he runs. And that's, you know, kind of something that we don't know. But to get to your point, it's a different age, yeah. And they're going to do it the way, you know, they want to do it. It's not that, but the difference is you and I still react the way we always have.
Okay.
We haven't changed.
No.
We see them changing, but we're still upset. Like, what are you doing?
That's right.
Yeah, right. You want to see some emotion, too, from somebody else, to your point. I like to see
Boone
go out
there. Well, there are plenty of people that have emotion on that team. There's a lot of emotion.
What about Judge, Susan? For me, he's the best baseball player. I've always said Bonds is the best player I've seen in my life, but Judge is better, and especially when you factor in the PEDs and everything. Where does Judge rank as far as baseball players in your lifetime?
Oh, boy, he's up there, and it's another one I hate to. I hate to put tops on people. I mean, he's another one that does little things differently every year. He comes back with something. I think we also expect them to be superhuman. I think it's kind of cool that Soto and Judge get cold at the same time. It's actually kind of funny. If you go through, the two of them go and they go and they go, and then Judge was off for a while, so it was Soto. Then they both go in a slump, and they're both sort of feeling for it right now. But there's still so much grinding there. The result might not be there. I'm going to ask you to look a little differently. Watch Soto, even when he doesn't get a hit, and he hasn't for a while. He's been not Soto-ish. Watch what he does to a pitcher. And let's take Seth Lugo out of the equation and get to everybody else. To me, he's a three-act play up there. And every at-bat, he exhausts people. And it's sometimes other people get the result of what Soto is doing. You know, now you got Austin Wells who started to hit. This is what they always thought he was going to do. People down in the order are getting the results of what both Judge, everybody is concentrating so hard on Soto and Judge that the benefit goes through the rest of the lineup.
Yep.
And look at it through that prism when you watch.
Oh, there's no question. And I remember saying, you know, early in the year where Austin, who I love, I think Austin Wells is eventually going to be an all-star. Yep. That's how highly I think of him. And I remember defending him like in April and even in early May, like the average was, he was sub 200. But and it's funny because we criticized the analytics, but I did lean on him there because I watch every pitch. I'm like, man, this guy's hit a bunch of balls on the screws. He's got nothing to show for it, but the advanced analytics back it up that eventually it's going to turn around for him. And it did. Like, he's gone from an interesting hitter to almost an irreplaceable cog in this Yankee lineup.
Well, don't forget he was signed as a hitter. They thought the catching was a work in progress, and that was going to be, but he was going to be a hitter. And this year, particularly when Trevino went down, he is, as Aaron Boone calls him, kind of a catching nerd. He really is. He loves the game planning. He loves all of it. He loves sitting with and getting a plan. And by the way, for example, Marcus Stroman never shakes off his catcher ever. So he trusts that Austin Wells has, okay, he's got the game plan. He did it. I'll just do whatever he says. That's how much they trust this kid. And he's a rookie. And he's a catcher for the New York Yankees and hitting in cleanup. I think he concentrated, not that he neglected his hitting, he was so concentrating on being a really good catcher that he wasn't comfortable. And Carlos Rodon, who's had him since spring training most of the time, said he's just comfortable. It's really simple to see. He thinks he belongs here now, catching-wise. And sometimes you just relax a little bit and, oh, yeah, I'm supposed to be a really good hitter. And, by the way, I am. He was, don't ever forget that. He was signed because they thought he was going to hit.
Yep.
Not because he could catch.
he has been a key part of their turnaround offensively, just stabilizing the top of that order. I mean, it's not too long ago, you think about the Subway Series, and you had J.D. Davis hitting cleanup for the Yankees.
Who's leading off? Jones? Who's that guy?
Jemai Jones. Loveliest man in the world. Nicest man in the world.
Yeah, Susan, just happy he's not batting leadoff anymore.
Exactly, right. Susan, it has been a crazy year in the Yankee booth. Obviously, I don't have to tell you that, but just from a listener perspective and all the different voices that you've worked with or even when you've been out, it's got to be, I know fans can't wait to have you and John back together. You got to be excited about the final week and then into the postseason having your partner return.
Well, I am, only because it's like, and we were in Chicago. I'm not exaggerating. I had hundreds of people in Chicago coming up to me in this, because you have to walk through the stands, and the place was filled with Yankee fans. So I'm in the stands a lot. So, but they were all saying, this is going to be great. John's coming back. Are you happy? I mean, people are yelling from the upper decks and things. It's an event, and it really is. And you know what, guys? I am really glad for him, because I know they had the ceremony and all that stuff, but he didn't get to broadcast and go out the way he wanted to. And I'm glad for him that he's going to have this time. And, you know, and playoffs, no matter how long it is, I think this team can beat anybody. They also can lose to anybody, as we've seen. So I have no idea what's going to happen. But it makes it like a special event, doesn't it?
John's no question. Oh, my God. It was so incomplete. And I got to tell you, I think you need to get a little more credit, because, you know, Emmanuel's young, and that's a tough spot to jump into. He's done a really good job. Great, great kid, too. Not a kid, but a great young man.
Absolutely.
I worked with Justin. Outstanding. He knows how to do it. But you had to adjust and adapt to so many different voices. Ricky, who's awesome. We all love Ricky. I think we took it for granted, you doing your job with so many different people.
Yeah, you know what I'd say? I was talking with Michael Kay about this, and we were talking about the difference, because he has different people all the time. The difference is I don't control it. I have to react to what they're doing, because they're doing the play-by-play.
Uh-huh.
So it's getting people, it's different than having a different analyst all the time.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, as I told you, you know, when they talk about growing up and changing, I'm up. This is me. This is what it's going to be, and I'm not going to, you know, I can't change, because this is who I am. If you do it right, you are who you are, and that's your personality, and you make it fit with anybody, and try and help the best you can. Because these kids, by the way, and I hate to put, Emmanuel's a kid, I'm sorry. He's 25.
Yeah, I hear you.
I'm wearing a sweater tonight that's older than Emmanuel. So
that's great. And let's be, Susan, let's be honest here. Susan Walden, BT and Sal on the Fan. It, not that we're going to have you rank it, but if you were to rank your least favorite co-worker, Mr. Carton at the bottom?
No.
Oh, no, I don't have. No, it was wonderful. It was a fine weekend. Yeah.
I'm teasing. You guys sounded good. I'm just happy you guys got together. It's cool.
Was Kay talking about Flaherty?
Oh, here we
no,
go.
No,
here
I'm just kidding.
Go.
Don't answer that. Give me, Susan, before we let you go, you mentioned the Broadway plays. I know you love them. Unfortunately, I got married and had a kid, so I haven't seen a play in a while, but give me the best play, a must-see play over the last 10 years or so.
Oh, the show that I think changed Broadway, because there are certain shows in Chorus Line was one, Oklahoma was one, White Side Story was one, the one that at Hamilton changed the world, changed absolute theater. Hamilton is the best show I've seen since, I don't know, probably Chorus Line.
You know, and I haven't had a chance to see it. First of all, tickets were ridiculously expensive.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, I saw the movie. I was going to ask you, like, is that okay to see it on TV, or I have to go?
You know why? It really is, because it's the original cast.
Right.
And there are two people that, you know, everybody's good. Everybody who replaced people are good. There are two people that cannot be replaced. One is Lin-Manuel Miranda, who is Alexander Hamilton. So, and he wrote it. So he is that. Everybody else is good. You can't replace Lin. And the guy who played Lafayette Jefferson, and that's David Diggs. And those two can never be, you know, you can have people and they're fine and they're good. Those two, to me, are original, and they are seared in my memory and heart forever.
Well, we know your Broadway background. And listen, between me and you, I mean, come on, this guy, it's always like it's the wife's fault or he's busy.
No, I mean, I used to live in a city. I would go to plays regularly.
Oh,
Book
you
of
did?
Mormon, I saw that. Yeah,
you did.
Wicked.
Did you see Lion King?
I saw Rock of Ages.
Wait a minute. You saw, we're talking about two different kinds of ilk. You're talking about Wicked, and I'm talking about Hamilton.
No, well, so. I know. I want to see Hamilton was on my list, Susan. I honestly couldn't get in when it first started, and then I just saw the movie, and I was like,
okay, it opened in 2016. I think you can probably get a ticket by now. but if you can't, the movie, it's not a movie. They taped the show.
Right. That's what I saw.
And
I saw
you
that.
Watch it, and I got to say, when I watched it for the first time, there were things, and I've seen it six times. And then when I saw the movie, I thought, I see it in road companies when I'm on the road. I've seen it all over the place. And when you see the movie, there are things that I did not notice because when you're seeing it live, you can't concentrate on everything. Mm-hmm. When you're watching it on television or in a movie theater, you see things in the background that you did not see when you were sitting there in the theater. And I think that's fabulous. And by the way, take your wife to see Six. She'll love that.
Six?
That's only an hour and a half. Six.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. There
Six.
You go.
Okay. We'll do.
Well, let's bring it. Final thing, and generous with your time. We appreciate this. Every Wednesday, by the way, Susan's going to be joining us for the Yankees. And we had Howie on earlier. If you guys missed that free Odyssey app, he was great. Susan's been great as expected. All right. You know, you've been in the booth for all these championships, and there's going to be a ton of twists and turns, and hopefully they're favorable for the Yankees. When you close your eyes, because you know what a championship team looks like, can you truly envision this team hoisting, winning like 28, winning, celebrating on the mat? Can you see that? Do you sense that?
Oh, no, there's a difference. I can see it, but I think a lot of it is because of what else. There's no great team. I think this team can beat any team that's out there right now. They also are capable of losing to every team, as they lost 2-3 to Washington and 2-3 to St. Louis or whatever it was, and lost to the White Sox. But that's, I think it has more to do with where baseball is right now. You know, and nobody thought the 96 team was, don't forget, they were down 0-2 to the Braves and went back to Atlanta, and they were all laughing at them. The Braves were laughing. So you just don't know. It's twists and turns. But I can see it because things can happen. What if Soto and Judge absolutely go on a tear?
There we go.
What if they chose someone? I don't know what's going to happen in the back of that bullpen or how it's going to work. But all of a sudden, somebody emerges there and is 1-2-3 in that bullpen. They're not going to win anything until the bullpen situation is rectified, whatever they're doing. And it's kind of cool to say, yep, we're going to be creative right now. It's never worked. If it works, God bless them. But it's kind of tough right now. And people are standing up. I like what Jake Cousins has done. He's been tremendous the whole year. Maybe Hamilton does it. I don't know what's going to happen. But until they rectify that, they're going to have trouble.
Susan, this was a lot of fun. Thank you so much for the time. We look forward to doing it again next Wednesday and every Wednesday.
Next week from Seattle.
Oh, okay. There you go. In Seattle, nice. A little different time change. We've got to adjust with that.
That's
but
all right. No. It'll be 12:30. I'm up early.
Hey, so, listen. Fine. There will only be great shows have come and gone. Great broadcasters come and gone. There will only be one first voice ever on WFAN. That is the legend, Susan Waldman. Thank you so much, Susan, for the time.
Okay, guys, talk to you next week.
You got it. That's right.
I love Susan.
I've always been a fan, too.
Yeah.
I've always been a fan.
First voice ever. Like,
you skipped over that Kay Flaherty thing real fast.
Well, I just wanted to bring it up. Yeah, I just wanted to bring it up as a joke.
No.
But, love Mike and the Dog, Summers, Benega, whatever, all the legends.
Yeah.
Susan was the first voice ever on The Fan. That's it.
I know.
Like, that will never change.
Nope.
And still great at what she does.
And, now it's different because 2024, not only was she the first voice, but it was a female. In 1987?
Right. On a female voice on an all-sports
like
station.
That.
First, yeah.
Even a female voice on an all-news station in 1987 would have been certainly maybe more common than sports. But think about how much the world's changed. So not only was she the first, first syllable, first thing, but a woman in 87. Amazing.
I love Susan. She's been doing such a great job here with John. I can't wait to have them both back in the booth. Not disrespectful to anybody who's
not
filled in, of course, but John and Susan, that's the booth. And we're
going to
get
that. Can I jump in with them?
Yeah. Well, no. Nah, I mean, what do you do? All right, BT and Sal on The Fan. We'll get back to your calls on the other side. We'll get some football stuff that we want to do coming up when we come back. 888-808-1019.
Yeah, Tiki took a shot at some people. Some people I'm going to have to defend. Coming up next.
If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.